This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas is a leader in America for wind power. The state has lots of wind in the west, the panhandle, along the coast. That can all be tapped and turned into electricity. But getting it to energy consumers can be complicated. And to be fair, wind does have some issues. But do they outweigh the benefits? There are some voices in Texas who are growing louder in their anti-wind agenda. Do wind supporters need to support this green energy source if they want to see it continue to grow? Call in with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon. We're joined again by Chris Euster. He is the Chief Operating Officer for CPS Energy. Chris Patterson is a graduate advisor and instructor at the National Wind Institute at Texas Tech University. And Joshua Rhodes is a research associate at the Energy Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. Welcome, all of you. It's great to have you here today. Chris, let me start off with you at CPS Energy. Tell us about your position. Congratulations for getting through another peak load summer here in San Antonio, South Texas.
Yeah, it's finally cooling off, so we're very happy we made it through the summer. It has been a record summer here for us in San Antonio and Texas. First of all, thank you for having us on the show, David. Always glad to be a part of the discussion. CPS Energy has a lot of wind in its portfolio. It's a big part of why we are a clean energy leader in the country. We've got over 7 wind farms that we contract with, over 600 turbines. Those are the big structures with the blades on it that are part of our what brings power here to San Antonio customers. We have added a lot of Gulf Coast wind capacity. You know, so you've got wind farms in the West Texas, you've got wind farms in South Texas, Panhandle in the Gulf Coast. So we have a diversity of wind farms across the state of Texas. More recently, we've been adding a lot of Gulf Coast wind because it blows during those afternoon hours when we have that peak load. So we are very very big proponents of wind energy here in Texas, and Texas is blessed with a lot of wind and solar resources.
Chris Patterson at the Texas Tech University, can you talk about where Texas is right now as a leader in wind energy production?
Well, here in Texas, we have the largest amount of wind energy installed. Second place would be Iowa, and third California. And if you add both of them together and multiply by 3, that's Texas. So we are growing very rapidly in the wind energy sector.
Joshua Rhodes, many people say this is an artificial benefit that Texas has because of the subsidies. Is this a subsidy-driven situation?
Well, I mean, if you look at the subsidies that wind does receive, it receives a production tax credit, which, you know, gives it $22 a megawatt hour for every megawatt hour that it produces. Those are federal subsidies, and so they're not paid. The whole thing's not paid for by Texans. It's paid for by all Americans. But these, you know, we have a habit in this country of we do subsidize nascent industries and nascent technologies and to get them off the ground and see if they can scale and make it. And the subsidies for wind and solar are about to start to, you know, step off. They're going to start winding down over the next couple of years because it seems like it's been successful in getting the industries to the point where they're able to succeed on their own.
So what does a wind power cost compared to other energy sources, Chris, at CPS Energy?
Well, you know, I think it varies on location and, you know, the structure of the technology that's getting used. I think one of the things about wind farms that folks don't realize, it's coming down the same technology cost curve as solar is. So, solar is getting faster and cheaper, more economical. Well, as these blades are getting bigger, the capacity per turbine is going up. And so the price is coming down for wind as we speak. So it really varies, but it is competitive in the marketplace.
I'm going to go to a voicemail that we got over the weekend on our voicemail line, and this is Glenn.
Good morning. This is Glenn. I absolutely feel that the city of San Antonio should continue to back alternative sources of energy. The future is in solar and wind power. Clearly, renewables are a better way to go because, there is a finite amount of coal and oil and gas, and it will run out someday.
Okay, and that is from our voicemail line. So Chris Patterson at Texas Tech University, is it, or I mean, we're not about to run out of coal. We got plenty of coal. Is that really the concern?
Not so much in running out of the resources we have, but conserving them and extending them for longer than what we thought we would have them.
So, Chris, at CPS Energy, you know, y'all use coal to generate electricity as well as use wind. So how do y'all decide, you know, when to use one or the other?
Yeah, so, you know, we've put forth in front of this community the flexible path, which basically is not going to be building another large baseload power plant. So we are very interested in these type of resources, solar, wind, demand response, energy efficiency, conservation. I think the challenge with wind and solar is it's intermittent. So when the sun's shining or the wind's blowing, you get the power. But if it's not, you don't have power. So energy storage is going to be a big key of that, and we're, you know, looking at that technology as well, but it's not really ready for the scale of what utilities need. So for us, the way we're thinking about wind is to combine it with solar, to combine it with demand response, and kind of create a package of resources that will give us a lot more firm power. But right now we need both. We need traditional power plants, and we need some of these you know, new energy resources.
The current White House administration is pro-coal, and they're rolling back some of the EPA regulations that may have played a factor in CPS Energy deciding to mothball padlock one of your coal-burning power plants. Is anything changing for you?
No. We're still set to shut down the Dealey coal units by the end of this year.
Joshua Rhodes, are things changing with the EPA's decision-making with the Trump administration, or are things still moving, looking positive for wind?
You know, I think things are still looking positive for wind. I don't think the changes to the clean power, or the proposed changes to the clean power plan, are really going to have much effect. I mean, right now it's mostly the market driving it. So, I mean, super cheap natural gas and cheap renewables are really what are knocking King Coal off of its perch. And, you know, it's going to be really hard to wade against the market forces that are taking us where we're going.
And the market forces are just the price and availability, or what is it, Joshua?
Well, right. I mean, so if you look at the price of gas, the price of natural gas has been so low has been low for a long time now. It used to be a volatile fluid. It used to be a volatile fuel, but now that we have, you know, with fracking and with unconventional reserves, I mean, we're able to get so much that it's kept the price so low that, you know, electricity prices have been, you know, very low, and they've been undercutting, coal plants. And since the grid dispatches the cheapest option to meet demand, it's been dispatching, you know, more gas, but also even cheaper wind and solar.
All right, we're talking about wind energy in Texas. Why is Texas the leader in wind energy? Is that going to continue? Are there some forces out there? Some voices are very critical of wind in Texas. Are they taking hold? We saw something in the last legislative session, SB 277, which is going to curtail some wind energy development. Why is that? If you've got any questions or comments, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8987, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Are you a fan of wind power? Well, why is that? You know, you probably have seen those big turbines maybe when you make a cross-country drive across Texas. You think they're beautiful or hideous. It depends, I guess, on your point of view. A lot of people like them. When I see them, I see, you know, you're creating jobs out in West Texas, or you're generating electricity. Some people, that means money. If you own that land, and if you're a struggling landowner, it's a good thing. What do you think? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. And here is Bill. And Bill, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Website gave some information that you were talking about the subsidies and
yes.
Objections to the subsidies for wind power. One should compare apples to apples, that the fossil fuel industry gets large subsidies, mostly from tax breaks of one sort and another. However, one of the things that is a subsidy that's rarely, if ever, accounted for is the burden of disease. Particulate pollution has been well established for 20 years or more to be pulmonary and respiratory and cardiovascular disease causing. Recently, type 2 diabetes, real problem in San Antonio and Bexar County, has also been shown this year to be a problem.
Bill, thank you for that. You bring up a great point. Let's go to Joshua Rhodes, Research Associate at the Energy Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. We can talk about the different types of subsidies that all energy sources receive, direct and indirect.
Right. So different. So, I mean, just about every form of energy receives some sort of subsidy. And so with solar and wind, they're easy to identify because they're codified into, you know, tax credits into the law. And then others are a little bit harder to identify. Things like, you know, there's a tax break for unconventional oil and gas extraction. We have, you know, R&D and subsidies for things like nuclear. And there's everyone gets, you know, their subsidy. And the caller's right. There are, you know, other subsidies or what we call externalities at this point, because we do not internalize those costs into, you know, the generation of electricity. But the caller's right. The, you know, the pollution created from burning fossil fuels does increase, you know, human, you know, mortality and morbidity, and, you know, does have a cost, particularly for those that live close to those power plants. And then, you know, there's climate change, which will affect us all.
Chris, at CPS Energy, San Antonio has been declared to be in non-attainment with the Clean Air Plan. Is that something that you guys are looking at with how y'all are moving towards energy production locally?
Absolutely. You know, a big part of our, you know, wind and solar effort is because of, you know, clean energy, air quality. If you look at all of our renewables over the past, you know, 10 plus years, we've taken the equivalent of 6 million cars off the road with lower emissions, saved about 28 million tons of carbon. So it's a big deal. Air quality is a huge deal for us. We take it very seriously. We're trying to electrify more applications, so we see more electric vehicles out there. They're, you know, hopefully in the future running off West Texas wind, charging in the middle of the night. So there's a lot of opportunity to really reduce emissions, improve air quality through wind, through solar, and through some of the end-use applications.
Yeah, so I'm going to go to another caller on our voicemail line, and this is Oscar.
Just wanted to say that Texas has been a leader in the area of wind energy, as it's by far the highest producing wind energy in all of the United States. And that was actually started by a Republican, Governor Perry, ironically, as you all know. And I just wanted to say that, you know, it's ironic that even at this stage in our political climate, we are still debating about things that even Republicans agreed upon some years back. That were good for us and helpful not only for our economy, but for our environment as well.
And Rick Perry is now our Secretary of Energy. Chris Pattison at Texas Tech University. One of the big things that happened under Rick Perry's watch was the extension of transmission lines across Texas so that we could capture that wind and bring it to the markets. Is that right?
Yes. In the early 2000s, they did a study to determine competitive renewable energy zones, which then would increase the wind production. So then transmission lines, now called CREZ lines, could reach those areas to carry the wind to the most populated areas where energy prices were getting higher and higher and higher. And so they snaked through the central part of Texas into the Texas Panhandle and carrying that wind energy to the primary loads of San Antonio, Austin, and Dallas-Fort Worth areas.
Chris Uxer, one of the areas that wind leads is that it doesn't require water. Why is that a big deal?
Well, yeah, water is a huge issue for us in terms of making sure we have enough water in the future years as we're adding a million new citizens and customers here to the San Antonio region. Traditional power plants use a lot of water. We fortunately use reclaimed water through our relationship with SAWS. So wastewater treatment outflows are basically used by our power plants for their cooling. But wind and solar don't use any water, and so that's one of the things that makes it very attractive to us.
Chris Pattison at Texas Tech University, is that a selling point when you talk about the future of wind? Is that it doesn't consume water? It's a because when you got to spin turbines, you got to generate steam. That steam is water, right?
Correct. And not only do they not use water for cooling, they also don't have any fuel costs. So that keeps the wind energy costs low. And when you're in West Texas, every drop counts. And so not consuming that, the aquifers and the available water for power generation means more for Texas farmers and agriculture.
So I got an email from Kenneth. He says, I am a supporter of wind and other renewable energy generation methods. My question is, what is the impact on birds and other wildlife in areas where turbines are operating? So Chris Pattison at the Texas Tech University, can you talk about that?
Several years ago, a study was done, and for every 10,000 birds that are killed by running into windows, hitting buildings, killed by cats, killed by dogs, less than one of them out of every 10,000 is killed at a wind project. Typically, it's the larger birds that have the greatest impact because they actually fly high enough to impact the blades, but that is usually during migration. And so during those times, wind projects are much more aware of whooping cranes, geese, eagles, as they migrate through the area and can take appropriate actions. New technologies coming up to where it's like a radar, where the radar can see in approaching birds or flocks of birds and actually shut down the turbines according to the speed of the birds to allow them to fly through safely.
So, Chris, at CPS Energy, you are, I mean, you're running a multi-billion-dollar operation. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're concerned about, you want to do the right thing with generating green energy, but you got to pay attention to what the ratepayers, that check they got to cut every month. How do y'all look at the cost of going towards wind or other renewables versus other things that you have invested in?
Yeah, so the cost is coming down, so it's getting much, much more competitive. As the other panelists mentioned, the fuel factor is free. The capital, the upfront capital costs for these wind farms, solar farms are getting cheaper and cheaper. So it's in my view, less of an economics issue and more of a reliability issue, because without energy storage, you can't run at power a city on 100% solar and wind today. And so even though the economics are getting there, it's not really apples to apples to look at a traditional power plant and a wind farm, because you have that intermittency. So we've got to solve that piece of it. The economics are going to be there, but it's that intermittency piece that we've got to solve here in the near future.
And so a kilowatt per hour for wind is like how much?
Again, it varies. It's kind of in that range, yeah.
And so versus nuclear power, I mean, that's kind of more of a higher up, expensive power, right?
Well, again, it depends on how you look at the cost of power. If it's variable of, once you've built this facility and how much it costs you to build to produce the power on a variable basis, it varies across the board. But one of the nice things about renewables is that variable cost is zero. So the variable cost of producing power from a wind farm or a solar farm is zero. So once that plant has been built, it's going to come to market.
And Chris Pattison, one thing that people talk about is jobs. At Texas Tech University, you're trying to get people ready to take those jobs, I imagine. So what are you seeing?
Well, a recent report was put out by the Department of Energy and Department of Labor saying that to meet our renewable energy goal in 2030, we need 1,000 university-trained individuals to fill positions. Last year, we graduated 60 of them, so we're a little bit short, but it's definitely a growing area. It's one of the fastest job markets in the United States, and it's not just in Texas, but throughout the U.S.
Josh Rhodes at the Energy Institute at UT Austin, we're talking about energy storage. A lot of people have come up with ideas. It seems like there's breakthroughs all the time. Been reading about ultracapacitors as something that could be a game changer. What are you looking at?
So the big thing with energy storage around renewables is more what we call seasonal storage. So being able to store large amounts of energy for over a large amount of time. Battery prices, are coming down, and there we can store small amounts of energy, at this point, but you know, figuring out how to store those large amounts of energy and you know transfer it from you know the spring to the summer, not just you know the night to the day, but like you know from the winter to the fall, to winter to spring or something like that. That's the really big thing that a lot of people are trying to figure out right now if we really want to get into very high levels of renewables. And yeah, I think that's a big area of research right now.
Yeah, can you tell me more about how you would do that? I mean, you're not talking about electricity storage, you're talking about what, kinetic energy storage?
So the traditional way we do that right now is what we call pumped hydro, to where it's essentially like a hydroelectric facility, but you've got a reservoir up high and you've got a reservoir down low. And so whenever the water flows from the high reservoir down to the low reservoir, you can generate electricity from that. And then whenever you have excess electricity on the grid, you can pump that water back uphill and you store it in the form of potential energy. And that's kind of how we do a lot of that here in the US. Although what that requires is having water and elevation in the same spot. And unfortunately in Texas, we don't really have that in very many locations. A lot of our elevation's out west where it's really dry, and a lot of our water's out east where it's pretty flat. And so, you know, also having things like, you know, connecting to other grids, be they DC ties, that may be a way to, you know, move some big power around. But it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a challenge going forward for the Texas market.
Well, there's been some talk of people having personal batteries in their homes, large scale batteries, wall batteries that could suck up the juice and then you use it when energy is a lot more expensive.
That's totally doable. You know, the prices right now, the prices for those personal batteries are still pretty high right now, and I'm hopeful that they'll, you know, come down. But those batteries are usually, you know, have about enough energy to, you know, run a house for about a day. And so, you know, you want to make sure that the lights come on, even if, you know, it's been cloudy for a few days. So, you know, figuring out how to do this long-term energy storage is going to be helpful. But the thing is, you know, Texas is so big and so geographically diverse that I'm not really convinced that it's going to need that much storage in the grid, because sometimes when the wind's not blowing in one part, it's blowing in the other, and it's the whole state's never cloudy at the same time.
And Chris, at CPS Energy, you wanted to add real quick?
I think Josh is right. Energy storage is a huge game changer, and there are different technologies. But in terms of traditional batteries, it's the scale that's the issue. We've had batteries, you know, around forever in terms of, you know, powering our toys and mobile devices.
They're getting better and better.
Those are in watts. We're talking about megawatts, which is thousands of times, you know, more capacity. And so we're starting to see it move into transportation, kilowatts, but there's still some work that has to be done to make that viable at the utility scale with battery technology.
And so you also have, you need to be able to turn on the gas-powered plant or whatever in order to make sure we don't, you know, fall short when we need it.
The lights don't come off.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to continue talking about wind energy in Texas. What is the future of wind energy? You got questions or comments, the number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about wind energy in Texas, and now we bring in Bill Peacock. He's the Vice President of Research at Texas Public Policy Foundation. Recently, they have come out as not being bullish on wind in Texas. And Bill Peacock, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me on, David.
So can you kind of help us figure out, you know, we've been kind of having a love-in here about how great wind is. Set us straight.
Well, I'd be happy to join in on the conversation. You know, the thing is that for centuries, innovation in energy production has been about making energy less expensive. And it's been a great boon to civilization, because as energy's become less expensive, we've been able to do more things with it. We've been able to build use engines. We've been able to build buildings and crops and cattle and all these kinds of things. All that, hospitals and medicine, all that is inexpensive energy, has been a big part of it. But today, unfortunately, what we seem to be going through is innovations in making energy more expensive, and that's certainly what we see with wind and solar today in Texas. The only reason Texas is the nation's largest generator of wind power is because of subsidies. We have federal subsidies and state subsidies and local subsidies. And so we're getting all this wind energy, but it's costing consumers and taxpayers a lot of money.
So you're talking about the true cost if we stripped away subsidies.
Right. Yeah. If you take, well, no, the cost of electricity, you know, wind energy is part of the subsidies, right? And so you have what the consumers pay for it on their electricity bill, and then you also have the cost that taxpayers and property owners and things like that pay on the back end.
Okay. So what do you want to see happening moving forward, Bill Peacock?
Well, really, we just want markets to happen. If you allow markets to make these decisions and people, you know, because markets are just a group of people getting together and trading things back and forth, if you allow markets to work and people to make their choices, we'll see what the best energy going is out there. My doubt is that that's wind. I mean, you know, wind and solar were being used have been used to produce energy for hundreds of years. The first wind turbine to produce electricity was back in the late 1800s, but as soon as coal and oil and gas and nuclear came online, they just blew past the renewables that we had because they're more efficient, cost efficient, they're more efficient, they produce better electricity. So, who knows what would happen, and if people want to do wind without subsidies, that's great. But I think that probably wouldn't be the case in most instances.
But you want subsidies to end for all energy production, no matter what, direct and indirect?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been concerned about proposals at the national level to, in Texas several years back and now again at the national level for subsidies to go in and support coal and nuclear sources of generation. We had this proposal back in Texas a while back that would have provided about $3 billion in subsidies, mostly for coal and nuclear. And matter of fact, we joined in with a lot of environmental groups in opposing those subsidies. And so we're against subsidies across the board.
Yeah, but I don't see videos being produced by the Texas Public Policy Foundation attacking the coal industry for subsidies or just for wind.
Yeah, well, that's because it's wind that is doing the most harm to the Texas electric grid and the Texas electric consumers. Subsidies for wind are multiple times that of any other source, and then solar takes it to another level past that. When you look at it on a per kilowatt unit of generation.
Can you tell me what you mean by how wind is doing harm to the grid?
Sure. Well, it's providing great instability on the grid because the wind doesn't blow always when you need it. And when the only rolling blackouts we've had due to generation sources going offline recently was wind. About 2011, the wind stopped blowing during a cold snap in Texas. I think it was February or March. And we had rolling blackouts because of that in Texas, and that was the last time we've had that. So that's one issue there.
That could also be, a lot of people say that may have been due to the fact that with Texas energy deregulation, we have to have less power in reserve than we did in the past. And if we had that power in reserve, which we had, then those rolling blackouts never would have happened. And they say those rolling blackouts were actually due to deregulation.
Well, a lot of people don't like markets, and we can have that debate some other time. But
we're just talking about this one specific thing. We're not talking about markets. When you blame one thing, and others, I'm just offering another explanation.
Sure, they blame it on markets, and that's what they blame it on. We think markets are the best way. Government intervention just doesn't solve people's problems.
Sure, but if you don't mind having rolling blackouts.
No, it's wind that causes the rolling blackouts.
Okay, we're going to move on, but there are experts who say different. Let me go over to ask one of our other experts that we have here, and that's Joshua Rhodes at the Energy Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. Do you see wind power as being harmful to the Texas grid?
You know, The Texas grid has run up to 56% on wind, and you know it's feathered, it's you know, fared just fine. You know, it's, I mean, wind is stochastic. I mean, you can't control it, but the thing about it is that, you know, you're never going to be able to control it, but the better you can predict it, the more you can trust it. And I mean, that's what we do. You know, we put resources into predicting when the wind is going to be available, when it's going to blow, when it's going to ramp up, when it's going to ramp down. But you know, the main thing, the thing about stability and these, that's provided by a market called ancillary services, and I won't get into that. But those numbers that we procure, the amount of reserves that we procure to make sure that the grid is stable, is based off of the largest power plant that could trip offline at any given time. And right now, that's the South Texas Project nuclear plant. As we've added all of this wind, the level of reserves that we've had to procure has not gone up. In fact, it's gone down with when we switch from zonal to nodal, which is a market change, which made the market run more efficient. But you know, we just haven't seen that happen in the grid.
So a lot of people weigh into the conversation as we try to do the calculus about the benefits of renewables. Bill Peacock, they look at climate change issues, and I imagine that's not something that you look at.
Yeah, we look at all kinds of things, and first and foremost, we look at the most efficient, cost-effective way to accomplish our goals. And like I said, wind is focused on making electricity more expensive. It's more expensive to generate wind and solar than it is from other fuels. That makes it more expensive. We also look at things like batteries, which, you know, those are expensive. They add more costs on those. And if you just go back to our traditional fuels, make things a lot more efficient and effective and cost effective. And if you want to talk about CO2 emissions and that, you know, the United States is leading the world in reducing CO2 emissions, and Texas in particular is doing that. And the reason they're doing that, it's not because of wind, it's because we've been able to shift more production in many ways to natural gas, which has a much lower CO2 signature than coal does. And plus, just because markets are moving this transition process forward rather than the regulatory regimes we see over in Europe that just aren't working.
So we got a tweet from Bruce. He says, we better subsidize wind energy or we'll be paying 10 times that amount for hurricane damage, air pollution, and climate change problems. So Bill Peacock, can you respond to that?
Well, you know, typically what we see anytime when folks want government to intervene in something, they say, we've got these far-off problems that are going to cause us a lot of problems, cost us a lot of money. We need to take taxpayers' money today and spend it in order to solve these problems off in the future. But that typically doesn't pan out.
Okay. And let me go to Chris Patterson at the National Wind Institute at Texas Tech University. Do you see wind energy as a problem, as you know, do you hear Bill Peacock? Can you, anything you want to respond to?
Well, the first thing that Mr. Peacock had mentioned was instability in the grid, but I think what he meant was variability. Instability in the grid is when frequencies go off and that kind of stuff. When he was talking about the drop in wind power, that's variability, not instability. And at that same cold front that came through, coal plants in the Dallas area froze. They had to shut down. And that was the reason that there was such a lack in electrical generation, was not only as the front moved through, which they knew it would do, but these coal plants froze.
So, Bill Peacock, in the last legislative session, we saw Senate Bill 277 pass, which was authored by Donna Campbell, a Republican from the New Braunfels area, and which was, some have seen that as an anti-wind law that was signed by Governor Greg Abbott. Anything like that? Anything more like that coming up?
Well, I can't speak for the legislature, but I do know that there is a lot of interest around the state in dealing with this, the problems that wind causes. You know, wind does cause instability to the system because of its variability. When you don't get enough wind, it starts dropping voltages and all those kinds of things and causes a lot of problems. But it also causes problems to people. We've been traveling across the state meeting with people in Comanche who have to live underneath these windmills practically in their backyard. We've been going down to down to the border and Del Rio and talking to people down there about wind farms.
Right, did you talk to people about fracking going on in their areas as well?
They were coming to us. They wanted to talk about wind.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank you so much, Bill Peacock, Vice President of Research at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. They have a voice which is skeptical of the benefits of wind in Texas and the subsidies that it receives. We're going to take a break. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having a spirited conversation about wind energy in Texas. Is it the future of Texas, renewables? Is this a way to Texas can be powered green? How reliable is that? The number is 210-614-8980. If you've got a question or a comment, Chris Yulkster is with us. He's the Chief Operating Officer for CPS Energy. Variability, unreliability, have we seen problems with wind generation, with CPS Energy?
No, not really. I think the market is working. This past summer, we've had record demand. No one's really building any more power plants out there. Most of the capacity that's coming into ERCOT, into Texas, is wind and solar. And we've done a really good job. I think ERCOT's done a really good job with responsive reserves, forecasting wind resources. We've gotten a lot more sophisticated with that. And it's ending up into a very reliable grid. So we've not seen any issues.
And Chris Patterson at the Texas Tech University, where if market share goes right now, what does Texas have for wind? Where is that going?
Currently, we've broken 23,000 megawatts in Texas. And within the next couple of weeks, they're going to break ground on one of the largest wind projects in the United States in the Hale County area. So it's growing, and it's really helping energy prices to drop in far metropolitan areas, because the air around in West Texas, we pay so little for electricity because there just aren't that many people that the CREZ lines carry the power to the larger metro areas and lower their energy costs.
Joshua Rhodes at the Energy Institute at UT Austin, as wind power begins to grab more and more market share in the state, who's losing out? Who's getting crowded out?
Well, I think you're seeing some natural turnover in the markets. We've had some coal plants retire, but if you look at the average age of the coal plants in Texas, they're in their 30s and pushing 40s, and that's about the lifetime of these plants. And so we're seeing other things, older, less efficient natural gas plants retire. We've even seen some early wind farms repower, so they take down the older generation of turbines and put up new ones. So, the market's always changing over, and at that time, it's going to respond with the cheapest thing that's out there. And right now, that's a lot of wind.
Yeah, so, but we have coal, we have natural gas. Those seem to be pretty dominant for energy production. Is one more, I guess coal is the one that's getting squeezed out.
Right, yeah, coal is the one that's getting squeezed out. So in 2017, we got about 30% or 32% of our energy from coal. And with the coal retirements that we've had either this year and, at the end of this year with J.T. Dealey retiring, I think, we may see more wind energy than coal energy in just the next few years.
Chris Patterson, we heard from Bill Peacock at Texas Public Policy Foundation. He's saying that the people who live in the rural areas are suffering because they have to look at these windmills out there. And also he's complained about noise. Is that a burden for folks?
We've not seen it other than the surrounding landowners that didn't typically get a turbine on their property. Those that live within the project that have turbines on their property don't seem to have any health benefits or any sleeping disorders from the turbines. But those that are around the wind project that don't have a turbine have a lot higher occurrence of saying that they're having problems with it. Many agricultural people know that land changes, and to sit and watch instead of paint dry, watch the wind blow and make extra money. You can't guarantee when your crop's coming if you're not going to get rain. this is a way to supplement their income, and landowners love it.
Let's go to Daniel. The number is 210-614-8980. Daniel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to mention that the aesthetic of wind turbines always growing up as a generation
go ahead.
Really cool to me, rather than growing up and seeing smog like being produced from factories or whatever it may be down that we had out in the Valley of Texas. But driving up to Austin to study environmental science, I definitely saw wind turbines, and seeing them is a good inference that we're headed towards the right future, and it's something that I'd like to see more of in the future.
So you like them, you see them, and you think you get a positive vibe.
Yeah, and that's about it.
All right, Daniel, thank you for that. Is this the way, are wind turbines going to change? Is Joshua Rhodes at the Energy Institute, I turn to you because I think you're more about the future. Is this what they're going to look like? This, I see all these other drawings and videos of other looking energy producers. Is this where they're going to be?
You know, I think we've probably settled on the technology that we're going to use, and they're probably going to get bigger. You know, that's where they're going to go from. But there's some other technologies, vertical axis turbines, which, you know, look like egg beaters upside down. But they're just not as efficient as, you know, the ones we see out there. I think that's what we're going to see, but I think we're going to see them get a bit taller and a bit bigger.
Much bigger?
Well, I mean, they're testing, you know, turbines that are about, they may not be twice as tall, but they put out, but they're about twice as powerful, you know. But so right now the average, you know, turbine sitting about 300 feet off the ground. And I mean, I think they're trying to push it up into 450 feet, which to let it get up into some of the better wind up there. And then they put a bigger bigger motor on there to generate more electricity at that height.
The Texas Public Policy Foundation, Joshua, one of their complaints is that they're so loud. I have stood underneath a turbine as it was cranking, and it didn't seem loud to me at all. So do you have any experience in that area?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that too. And I've heard people that don't like them and people that do like them. The newest generation of turbines are a lot quieter. So some of the older ones, they had gearboxes, they had reduction gears, they had a whole bunch of, you know, moving parts. And these days, they have a lot fewer moving parts. And I mean, I think they've been working on them to get them, you know, so that they're not so disruptive. But I haven't really heard of it myself.
And Chris Patterson at Texas Tech University, what kind of jobs people can get in this industry? You have people trained to climb those towers and maintain the inner workings of the turbine?
Yes. At Texas Tech, we don't train them to climb the turbine. We give them the opportunity to climb, and then they can get a job in the operations and maintenance of them, maintaining them, keeping them going. Our students can do everything from siting, running software, development of a project, all the way through finance, economics. Our students can cover the whole gamut of it.
Let's go back to the phones with Justin. Justin, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, since wind can be so variable, if we've looked into, or if anyone's discussing a battery solution like what was implemented in Australia, or what is the mechanism for managing that variability?
Okay, let's go back to Joshua Rhodes at his Energy Institute at UT Austin. Thanks, Justin.
Sure. So one of the ways we deal with the variability of wind is just the fact that the state is so large that when the wind is going down in one area, it may be going up in another, staying stable. And so, I mean, if you look at different wind farms, if you get more than a couple hundred miles apart, there's really no correlation in their output. And so just by, you know, being blessed with so much area and so much space, the grid's able to kind of soak that up. Because we've been managing the grid with changing demand for decades. For as long as the grid's been operational. So we know how to, make up for loss or, you know, create more whenever we need to. And the market's just set up and designed to, you know, to be able to do that.
Okay, and Chris, let me go to Chris over at CPS
quick,
Energy.
Which is kind of, the role of our traditional plants is really filling that energy storage role here until that technology develops. So we may be running our coal plants at a quarter of its capacity overnight when there's a lot of wind on the system. And then when the wind dies off and the load starts to grow, that plant may ramp up. So our traditional plants are playing an important role in terms of firming up these assets. And ERCOT has ancillary services, reserves, and things like that that they do to basically allow traditional plants to play that role of energy storage until energy storage becomes more viable at the scale of utility.
And so talk a little bit about the program you have at CPS Energy. Wintricity, is that what that is?
Wintricity is a retail program. So if customers want to have wind power assigned to their account and basically get the credits for wind contracts that we have, they can sign up to that program. They can find it on our website. I think you have to search the word Wintricity. You can call our call center and sign up for the program. There are different ways of doing it, but it is available to all our customers in San Antonio.
So you're basically signing up and saying, I support wind.
Yes, but we will assign the credits from that particular wind farm to that customer's account.
Chris Patterson at the Texas Tech University National Wind Institute, you wanted to add something?
And something that Mr. Euster said with CPS, that it's called geographic dispersion. The further out you spread the wind projects, the less impact they have on the system. As a front moves through, some will increase while others decrease, and it's very easy to follow through.
I noticed doing some research for this that the Logan's Gap Wind Energy Farm in Comanche County, they gave $175,000 to the tax office there for the first 6 months of this year. So this is also putting money in the tax coffers as well. Chris Patterson, really quick, is that right?
Yes, both local and to the communities, schools, et cetera.
All right. And Joshua Rhodes, what's the next big breakthrough we should watch? We're short on time.
I think the next big breakthrough, I think the next big breakthrough we'll see is actually in solar. I think we're going to see a lot more solar be developed in the state. I think we're going to continue to see wind developed as well.
So there's a lot of room for solar energy development. And Chris, y'all, I guess, doing that at CPS Energy as well.
I think the big thing is flexibility. That's why we've put the flexible path in front of our community so we can incorporate these technologies as they become viable.
All right. Wind energy in Texas. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.